Welcome to our weekly Church on the Rock podcast. For more information, visit us at churchak.org, download our Church on the Rock AK app, or like us on our Facebook page. Thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoy our weekly podcast.
Naked and unafraid. Well, this is our new series. We had Pastor David Pepper, the founder of Church on the Rock, here last week, did a great job. So we actually delayed to start this series here this week. Naked and Unafraid, we're going to be talking about marriage. Next week, we're going to talk about raising kids, family issues. Then we're going to talk about actually raising parents, raising good parents. For you kids, that'll be for you, because that's part of your job too as well. Did you know that? Well, you'll find out more about that later on. So we're gonna hear the series of topics on family and marriage. We think that's something that we should do, obviously, at least once a year. And so this is the time we're going to do that. We call this Naked and Unafraid, marriage, tie in that knot. And so what we're going to do through this, I'm going to try to be very practical. Whenever you hit relational topics, boy, you sure want to be practical, right? We don't need stuff over here and over here that doesn't apply. So the Word of God is very practical. It's truth for today. It's always relevant, always. So we're going to look into this today. and marriage, I'm just going to tell it like it is. I'm going to throw it down, all right? So brace yourself. You want to hear it, right? You're okay with that, right? You don't want me to beat around the bush, do you? No? Good. I could tell you don't. You didn't come here just to, you came here because you're purposeful. Well, let's look at the opening verse, this Naked and Unafraid. Let's go straight back to Genesis where all this began, because marriage was God's idea, his institution. He set it all up. Genesis chapter 2, verse 24 through 25 says this: "Therefore, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined or united to his wife, and they shall become one flesh, and they were both naked, and the man and his wife were not ashamed." Oh, that's how we got that title. Well, before Adam and Eve, there was perfect union before they fell. We knew that. You see it from scriptures. They were completely naked. In other words, let's put it this way. They were completely vulnerable. And there was nothing to hide. They were completely transparent. And they were not ashamed. There was nothing to be ashamed. There was no fear. There was no striving. There was no competition. There was no insecurities. There was no hidden sin. There was nothing to hinder their relationship. In other words, that nakedness gives you a sense of just emotional, spiritual intimacy at the deepest level. And that's God's ideal for marriage. That really is, from the very beginning. But after the fall, of course, they were gripped and taken hostage by fear and by guilt and by shame. It all came rushing in, began to grab their lives and begin to order their steps from that day forward. So they found themselves at that point hiding in a garden. You know the story. You can go back. And they resorted to their own ways of covering up and dealing with the situation. Through their own insecurities at that point, they tried to hide their nakedness and their shame and their fear and everything they were dealing with. And so how did they do that? Well, they immediately stepped into these self-defense mechanisms. Let's blame each other, let's blame God, and let's somehow deny. So blaming and denial, it started way back then and it continues to this day. We find different ways to do that. And so the unity and the blessing that they once had, they walked away from. Through this horrible choice of believing the deceiver. And they were at that point taken hostage by all this other stuff. And the destroyer came in. Now, God's ideal for marriage is harmony, it's intimacy, it's unity. Harmony, intimacy, unity. Transparency. That place where we can live without shame. That place we can live without fear. That place where we can live without striving and contending and all these different things. Now, very few marriages probably experience this today. Very few probably have any or most of those components today. And if the truth were known, you might even be here today and feel like you've been cheated in your marriage. Maybe you feel like there's been a sense of disappointment because those things haven't really happened like you thought they were supposed to. Your expectations were not what they should be or how they should have played out. And so what we have to understand is good marriages don't just happen. It's just not some type of a gravitational pull like this is going to get really good. Actually, a lot of times the gravitational pull is going to be the opposite. Good marriages don't just happen, they take effort. You have to be intentional. You have to apply yourself. You have to change. I know that was tough there. Nobody likes to change. It takes effort. Let me put up Ephesians chapter 4, verse 3. It says here, make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace. What does that first part say? Make every effort. That's the tough part. I'm going to talk about six areas this morning, six actually foundational areas in marriage. There's many more, but these are probably some of the top ones that we need to really press into and pay a lot of attention to if we're going to have a healthy marriage. They're building blocks. But first, before I get to that, let's just go back to this Genesis chapter 2, verse 24. This principle that is often missed when newlyweds get married. Therefore, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. It says, leave father and mother. In other words, there's a leaving and a cleaving principle. Leaving all other relationships, leaving friends, leaving old flames, leaving mom and dad, leaving siblings, leaving everything to do what? To cleave to one another. And that word actually means to, in a sense, form a bond that has been cemented together or welded together like two pieces of metal. That's a pretty strong bond. That's what we're talking about here. But that strong bond is incapable of happening if you have not fully left all the other stuff. Cleave, cleave, cleave. Cleave means that neither of you should ever feel that you have to compete with anyone or anybody else for each other's affection, time, attention, loyalties. There's no interference. This is one of the first things I talk about in premarriage counseling. Got to get this down. A lot of people don't get this down. They don't start off cleaving like they should because they haven't fully left. What I find in Genesis chapter 2, verse 24, says that is why man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife and become one flesh. Isn't it interesting? Adam and Eve, God tells Adam and Eve to leave mother and father. This is why you do this. They didn't even have parents at that time. I have a suspicious feeling that God said, this is going to be an issue coming up, so I'm just going to go ahead and put it on the table. So he did. He threw it down. He says, by the way, mom and dads are coming. Got to leave. Got to cleave. If you want to have your own anointed union, the purpose of God happening in it, this union no longer exists the way it used to because you have come out from under it and you've formed your own nuclear bond in Jesus as a family. That leave and cleave is so important. Okay, now that we got that down, we step into then the building blocks. We're going to talk about, put C's on all these to hopefully make it more catchy for you so that you'll remember some of these. You can jot them down. It's communication, consideration, compassion, courtship, commitment, and Christ. We'll just blast through these. I don't have a lot of time to spend on. I could talk to you all day because there's so many things we could talk about, but we'll just get right to the point. So communication, Proverbs 13:17. This is a great verse in the new NLT. An unreliable messenger stumbles into trouble, but a reliable messenger brings healing. So communication requires us to be reliable messengers. If you do that well, it's going to do something really powerful. It's going to allow progress and good things in your marriage. Communication must be a priority for a satisfying, successful marriage. If you want to make progress, you got to talk. 85% of all marriage problems is poor communication. That's a high percentage, isn't it? 85%. The average couple talks to each other maybe 4 minutes a day alone. That's not very much. Look at some of these other averages. I'll just throw them out there. The average couple spends 47 hours a week in front of a TV, 38 minutes a day on Facebook, 2 hours and 22 minutes on the internet. And then the average couple therefore spends maybe 30 minutes a week communicating with each other. So that's pretty low compared to everything else. It's no wonder we don't communicate because we're not talking to each other. Now, communication is a skill that's learned and practiced. And it begins when we're little. It's kind of how we're wired. Men and women, they behave differently. I'm not going to get into all of our differences. We've done that before. But this is a big difference. Little girls, apparently, when they're born, they develop linguistic skills faster than boys, much more proficient conversationalists than boys at that point. If you notice, you get in a room, girls tend to be a little more quiet, and they do have a way of communicating, but you get in a room with little boys, and it's just noise. You know, they're just like making all kinds of noises. Maybe that's where we learn to grunt. I don't know. Some of the stuff I'm just coming up with right now. Oh, and it's not very funny, is it? Except for the one in the front row. I know, marriage is intense. Well, we'll get through this. But really, it's a good thing. So they develop these skills pretty. Now, this is the average communication for men and women. Women, average talk for women is about 30,000 words a day. Some up to 60,000. That's a lot. Now, for men, it's 20,000 a day, generally, somewhere around there. So when a husband comes home from work at night, generally he's probably used up most of his words. Maybe he's still got 50 words laying in the account somewhere that he hasn't used yet. And that's why they're generally going to kind of grunt their way through the rest of the evening. But women, most cases, if they're still home with little kids, they've been doing baby talk all day, and they're done with that. They're not doing that anymore. They've had enough drool and snot, diapers. And so they haven't used up all 30,000 words. And if they're a 60,000-word person, boy, you are in trouble because they got 20,000 still in the bank. And they want to use those up, and they want to use them up right now. And so they're just like, why? And the guys are like, you know, what is this? Tornado coming at me. He's grunting, right? Well, that's just the dynamic you run into. So guys are going to have to work a little harder at times to communicating, to talk. Communication's key. We call it verbal affection for women. Makes it sound better, doesn't it? Ladies going, that's what it is. It's verbal affection. You can use that on them. All right. Verbal affection. So guys, you got to do the affectionate thing, like talk. So quiet and echoey in here. Awkward. Oh, man, this is awkward. Some of you guys are going, get me out of here. I remember this young couple came in. This is way back in California, way back years ago. She came in crying. She's crying, tears. I'm like, oh, boy, here we go. And her husband's coming in behind her with this lost look in his eyes. It's like he's just kind of like, you know, just doesn't really know what's going on. Typical, just doesn't have a clue, you know. She's assumed everything, you know, and he's just like, ah. So I sit down and say, what's going on? And she says, she's just really upset because he would come home, throw his coat in the corner, plop down and watch TV. Didn't give her a kiss, didn't give her a hug, wouldn't say a word. She just could not handle that anymore. She's done. And I said, well, what do you want him to do? Tell him. So she told him, just come home and at least, you know, take some time to talk to me. I said, you think you can do that? He goes, sure. He didn't know. She just assumed he was supposed to know this information, this critical piece of information. She just decided to tell him in front of. And so apparently they worked it out because I didn't see him after that. And typical situation. They weren't communicating. Why? Because they weren't talking. You got to talk to let you know what you need. And so communication was a big deal there, and they worked it out. So, you know, something Lori and I learned really early on in our marriage, super early on, is we learned this in marriage classes and different things. We really put a lot of effort before we got married. We read books, and we went to counseling, and we went to a marriage encounter, a pre-marriage encounter thing, a couple days. And you know, we really said we're going to do this right because we didn't know what we're doing. And it really helped us a lot. But one of these things we picked up on was when you come home and the first take 5 to 15 minutes every single day and just you talk to each other, listen. So that's basically what I did. I would come home and she would talk and I would listen. And I listened well. I didn't just daze off, you know. And we would get the kids out of the room, tell the kids, go play. No, this is mom-dad time. They'd go. You're going to be fine. Go in the other room. Just give us some time. And it became a pattern in our life that we did for many, many years. And you know what I noticed through that? We noticed that there were no secrets. We just shared everything. And when you have that time set aside, you discover you don't have to have secrets. You got time to share them. Not that they're big, deep, dark secrets or anything. It's just, you're just an open book. You just talk. It's kind of cool how that happens naturally. Let's look at consideration. I got to move on. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 2 through 3. Check this out. Always be humble and gentle. Boy, if you could do that, you're going to go a long ways. Be patient with each other, making allowances for each other's faults because of your love. Make every effort. There's that every effort again. It keeps coming up. To keep yourselves united in spirit, binding yourselves together with peace. Huh? That's a loaded verse. So in other words, that's a big consideration. Showing your love and your help, being helpful by being helpful for each other. Considering means paying attention to the other person, their needs, listening well, showing courtesy, showing respect, not allowing manners to go out the window just because you've been married for 5 years. You don't resort to barking to each other, but you continue to be nice. That's a big one. Those little things go a long ways, you guys. Being nice, being a nice person. When she's coming home with all the groceries to unload and you get up out of your chair when you're just about ready to fall asleep, you say, okay, I'll get, and you get out and you go help. Or you wait till both of her feet are into the car before you back out of the driveway. That's might want to make sure you do that one especially. That's being really nice. Opening the door for her occasionally, you know. I mean, just every now and then, that's kind of what you used to do when you first got married and maybe before. Why do we stop doing those things? They're huge. They communicate huge things, those little things. The respect towards one another. Please and thank you. Don't let those disappear or evaporate. Continue those. You're modeling something for those around you. Maybe even other young couples that need to hear older, more mature couples continue to walk that way of life and pattern that's so important. There's a sense of dignity and honor and respect towards one another. You never want to lose that. That honor and respect. People end up barking at each other when they get older. I'm not sure why, but it's amazing how quickly consideration can vanish. It's like, honey, you sound really sick. Get in the car. I'm taking you to urgent care right now. Forget about the rest. We'll take care of that. I'll do the dishes. I'll take care of everything. You're coming home. You're going to bed. Of course, a few years go by, and you got the sniffles. You don't sound too good. I'll tell you what, why don't you just jump in the car and go down there, and I'll kind of hang out until you get back. Okay, that's good. Later on, boy, you don't sound very good. I'll tell you what, after you've made dinner and bathed the kids and did the dishes, then you can go to bed and I'll just kind of watch things. Oh, gee, thanks. Then it finally gets to the place. You mind going in the other room? I can't hear the TV over your coughing. This slowly descends into lack of consideration. Oh my, how that can happen so easily. It reminds me of the guy who said, man, when I first got married, she used to bring me my slippers and my dog would bark. Now the reverse happens. I know. Not a lot of laughter today. We lose consideration. Look at James chapter 3, verse 17. Let me throw another punch here. But this is wisdom. But the wisdom from above is first of all pure. It is also peace-loving, gentle at all times, and willing to yield to others, full of mercy and fruit of good deeds. The mark of a wise person is all that. It's consideration. So if I'm not considerate, then I'm not wise. I'm stupid. Okay, I won't take it any further than that. I'll tell you what, don't treat each other like a used car. We all like brand new cars. We take good care of them for about 6 months. Then it goes downhill after that. Don't treat each other like a used car. You're not a used car. You have something very precious at your side, both of you. Very, very God precious. Okay, let's move on. Compromise. How about that one? Compromise is a good one. Let's do this. We're talking about love in this chapter, 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 5. Love is a subject here. It says it does not demand its own way. How many marriages do that? Boy, the Bible's got lots of good stuff in it, doesn't it? Unloving is not trying to change your mate. The loving thing to do is not demand your own way according to the Bible. I could go on and on. There's many more scriptures, but we got to keep this short. Many people at the wedding, while they're saying, I do, subconsciously are saying, I'm going to redo. There's this progression in marriage. I've heard this. You walk down the aisle. You come to the altar. You may sing a hymn. I'll alter him. That's what's really going on. Okay. I'm trying to get in there. Love does not demand your own way. Three facts of life. You're going to have conflict in marriage. Marriage is not an absence of conflict, neither is love. For marriage to mature, you will move through conflict. Learn how to handle it properly in a mature way. And when you get on the other side of that, you're going to grow and be more in love than you ever were before. That's how conflict is supposed to work. What's interesting, though, is we come up with some issues in life, and they're more like speed bumps, but we treat them like these huge things we got to get over, and we call for the weeping of angels over it, and for World War III, when really, we may not agree on that. We might not ever agree on it. We might not agree on that issue for a season. But it's okay to not agree. Do you know it's okay to agree to disagree? In other words, it's okay to disconnect on an issue level. But when you're mature, you're going to stay connected on an emotional level. Your emotional, relational side, you should stay connected. It is possible to disconnect and agree to disagree on this issue, but by God, come hell or high water, we're going to stay connected on a relational, emotional level because that doesn't have to go down the tubes. And mature people know how to do that. And eventually you may come to some terms on that. Something we got to think about. Just because the person's different doesn't mean they're bad and they're a sinner. Did you know that? But they're not like me. Why work so hard making them like you? Do you know how boring life would be at that point? Now, if your attitude is, well, if the world was just like me, it'd be a whole lot better place. Well, that might not be true. So we have to let people's differences, the very differences opposites attract, that draw you together, continue to value those differences because that's how God created them. And it doesn't mean they're a bad person. I mean, some of those differences are like, that was so cool. It's so sweet the way you're like that. Oh, I just love you. Oh. And then when we get married, it's like, I don't like that anymore. Whatever happened in between, how'd that change? God made them that you have to value the differences and not let it end the day. Opposites do attract. Compromise is the evidence of real love. Meeting in the middle, being flexible, being willing to yield your rights, give and take. You know, when you get married, it's not about I and me anymore. It's about we and us. Something has to change. It's that merging of two rivers. It's really a lot of white water, but eventually it's going to level out because you have understood how to give and take and to realize that it's not all about me and what I want. There's the art of negotiation. Boy, I tell you, that needs to happen in marriage. The art of compromise. It's really important to learn that skill for a satisfying marriage. There's a lot of things. We talk about vacations. Some people like to do 102 things in 2 weeks. Some people just want to plop down and relax. They do vacations. They rest. They relax differently. You got to figure that out. How are you going to raise kids? Because you were both probably raised differently. Come to some terms on that. And it may not be what everybody else did. It might be finding out what the scriptures say about it. We'll talk about that next week. How are you going to spend money? Guarantee you both probably grew up in a different environment where money was spent differently, and you got to figure out how you're going to do that. And there's good biblical solid ways to come to terms with that. We just have to be willing to learn and flex and change. How often are you going to hang out with the in-laws? How are you going to spend your holidays? With the in-laws or the outlaws? Which one? Oh boy. That can be tough. Families are tough. But what makes you think you can spend it the way you want anyway? Because you got a family now, and you got to deal with it, and you got to be mature about it, and you got to flex and grow and learn. Make every effort. Okay, let's move on. Marriage. More marriages die, believe me, this is true, of inflexibility than adultery, alcoholism, and abuse. Just inflexibility. The fact is we're just flat out plain stubborn. How many admit you want to talk about somebody who can be bullheaded and stubborn? You're looking at them. I have had to really learn how to knock that nonsense off. And thank God, because the Lord's really give us a great marriage. We love hanging out together and being together. Whenever she leaves the house, I tell her, now, I want you back here soon, right? Come back to me. Fast. She always rolls her eyes. And you know. At least I get to say what I want, you know. We're so rigid, though. Don't want to change, don't want to negotiate, don't want to compromise, you're going to get messed up. Look at the courtship for a minute, and then we're going to have to. Proverbs 5:19 says, may you always be captivated by her love. May you always be captivated by each other's love. Courtship is a big deal. Physical affection is vital. It's critical. You kind of need to have that in a relationship too as well. But if there are more courting in marriage, there would probably be less marriages in court. Is that how you say it? Anyway, the real problem with many marriages is that what you did to win your mate's love or mature your love, what you did together during that part before you got married, when you get married, for some reason it ends. Why? Why does it end? Why? Yeah, I know, we get busy, we're both working. I know kids come on the scene, that's all true. But you still got to make some time to enjoy each other, to grow and mature your love continually. Husbands and wife, it's interesting because we see each other at the worst, absolute worst times of the day. In the morning, when you first get up, your hair is over here, a little drool, you know, and you're like, you know, rhino breath. And then on top of that, you're all stressed out because you're trying to get the kids ready, and you know, you got babies and diapers, and kids got to get to school, and you're trying to eat, and you know, it's just frazzled. You get out the door, hurry up, I'm late, it's snowing, now it's snowing, I got to scrape the windows. Oh. And then we make it out the door, and then we get home, and we're just tired. It's like, oh, long day, and I commuted, and oh man, I'm tired, and you're still kind of stressing by what you had to deal with that's earlier today. And so we don't get the best of each other all the time. And none of us come through that door and unstring our bow before we come through that door, you know? We come through like this. You know, the baby cries. Pew! Yeah, all tense and wound up. So, you got to date. You got to make time. It may not happen as much as it used to, but you just have to make time to go to a quiet dinner somewhere, just get out of the house, get the kids taken care of, make the sacrifice, do it, because it may be the only time that week both of you have actually unstrung your bow. And you can relax and you can kind of enjoy each other and talk about some things you've been wanting to talk about, or just maybe you didn't talk that much, maybe it was just being with each other and over a nice meal and being served. That's a healthy thing. Never feel bad about doing that, okay? Never feel bad about splurging on each other like that. That's super important. Do it. Anyway, Ecclesiastes 9:9 says, enjoy the wife of your youth whom you love. Well, date your mate. Make the relationship a priority. Get some fun back into it. Find out that common ground and share it. Marriages is built on relationships and memories. Build those memories together. So important. I got to move on. There's so much to say and so little time. Commitment. How about commitment? Let me throw a verse at you. Let's look at the Bible from Genesis to Revelation. It takes commitment to satisfy marriage. Malachi chapter 2, verse 16. For the Lord God of Israel says that he hates divorce, for it covers one's garments with violence. Boy, that's a strong word, isn't it? Hate. Yeah. Don't come under guilt, please. Maybe you're here and you've been divorced. Maybe you weren't serving Jesus and you got divorced. Maybe you were. I don't know. I know sometimes it's unavoidable. One way, one reason or another, the other person just not going to work. They've gone south. Or there's been tremendous abuse or addictions or whatever, deal breakers. And it happens, right? We live on a fallen world. But God is wonderful and he's beautiful and he gives us second chances, third chances. We come together, we get our life right with Christ. Somehow something happens. We marry that person again or something happens. Sometimes people get separated. But it's not for the purpose of divorce. It's for the purpose of ultimate restoration. And sometimes things are so bad that that's what's required. Don't have time to get into all that. But what I'm talking to you about when we're dealing with divorce is when you get married, your stance is always away from that, no matter what. That is how you position yourself. And that's so important that we do that. It's so important. Faithfulness in marriage. Because many couples have, I've been with couples, I'm telling you, who were ready to sign on paper. They were divorced, living in separate places. And they got right with Jesus and they came back together and they're living the dream today. Happens all the time. You don't hear about the good stories, the good testimonies. But it does happen. And they're reaping the benefits because they decide to make every effort. But you're never going to build a great marriage if divorce is always an option. Now, that doesn't mean somehow it may not, you know, unfortunately that may happen for some, but the intention is it's never an option. That's where you're intended. It's like, I never want to sin again, but I still might stumble. But it's never going to be an option. If it's always lurking back there behind you as a potential option, then you'll never build a great marriage because it's too easy to walk out. That's where I'm getting at. When tough times come and every bone in your body says, I can't take this anymore, and you're just at it. Every fiber of you is leaning in that direction. You have to say divorce is not an option because if it is, you'll take it. Reason why I'm saying this, look, there is an unseen world out there that you and I don't see. Talks a lot about it in Ephesians. And there are covenant-breaking demonic spirits out there, and their whole assignment is to rip marriages apart. That's what they do. 24/7. That's all they're about. And if you have been in a situation where you have gotten so mad and you've yelled, I want a divorce, we'll just get a divorce, then you open the door for that covenant-breaking spirit to come in and traffic. Why? Because you have given it permission through your own confession, through your own words. You have given the green light. And if that's been your situation or if you've ever done that, you need to be quick to repent and stop and say, God, I am so sorry. I repent. I will never say that again because that is not your will. And then you need to turn, you need to renounce that spirit and say, I renounce you, spirit of divorce. I close the door on you. I remove that legal right I gave you when I gave you permission to come in and to wreak havoc. From this day forward, you're out of here. And take a stand and say, I am submitted to Jesus Christ and I am committed to the covenant of marriage from this day forward. And that's the stand you have to take. You have to lean into that because this till death doeth part must be a reality. It must become a reality in your heart for marriages to become great because the divorce is always an option. If it's always going to be an option somewhere on the table, then you'll take it. It can never be an option. That should be your intent. God forbid. Stay committed. That's going to force you to change, to grow, to make every effort, to become flexible, to not be selfish. That's going to force you to run to Jesus like you've never run to him before. So don't use scare words. They're off limits. Don't pull up the past. Jesus doesn't do that to you. Don't hit below the belt. Don't press the hot buttons. Be mature. Be honest, be loving. Speak the truth, but speak it in love. Not just love, love, love because you become a doormat. Not just truth, truth, truth because people get beat up. Truth and love, Jesus said. Get it on the table. but love each other. Stay connected on the relational side. On the issue side, you may disconnect, but stay emotionally, relationally connected. Commitment means actually this. It means being willing to be unhappy for a while. So you can work things out. Good marriages don't just happen. Well, I've got so much more to say, but don't have any time. The last one's Christ. Let me just jump to that. Philippians chapter 2, verse 5 says, in your relationships with one another, have the same mind as Christ Jesus. The attitude. This is what I would say. And I can tell you this. I've spent a lot of time, you know, ministry over 30 years and dealing with marriages and everything else. Those marriages that were ready to call it quits, those marriages that were extremely just done, the ones that saved the day, the ones that made it, were the ones where either one or both individuals really committed their life to Christ. And miracles happened. That's I'm telling you. You have to come to that place where there's really a true, honest, deep surrender. Because I've discovered that some were just, they were not really surrendered to Jesus. They were still wanting to do their own thing. They were still not willing to humble themselves. They were attitudes they weren't going to change. They were going to dig their heels in. But I've seen men come to that place of such brokenness, literally humbling themselves and coming to that deep place of surrender in Jesus where I saw such transformation happen that anything was possible. Women too. And when you come to that place, I'm talking really committing your life to Christ. Do you know that one out of three marriages end in divorce? But do you know if you're married in church at a regular church service type wedding ceremony, it drops to one out of 50. But did you know if husband and wife both choose to come to church regularly and have a devotional life where they're praying and they're reading the word, they're actually really following Jesus, do you know what the statistics are? One out of 1,105 or six end in divorce. What does that tell you? Spiritual warfare. You're following Jesus. He changes everything. Why does that work? Because it was Jesus' idea. He set up the institution God did of marriage. It was his idea for us. When you follow him in that, Christ will not battle Christ. Christ will support what he created this for us. And he'll have heaven and all of heaven backing you and helping you in this. Therefore, you get to choose. But you got to make, some people just got to make a choice. Are we really going to follow Jesus? Or are we just going to take or leave it? It makes a big difference. When you fully commit your life to Jesus Christ and spend time with him on a daily basis, working, allowing him to work on your heart, there's nobody that can change your heart like God. He created you. He knows you better than you know yourself. And we can be so stubborn and so obstinate. But if you would just take the time, however that looks during the day, sometime where it's just you and Jesus, for him to talk to you and you to talk to him, and for you to really get into the word, begin to really talk to him. Now, some couples, they do this together. Well, they pray and read together. That just doesn't work for Lori and I. I got to have my morning time. I need at least to have 45 minutes, an hour or something, where it's just me and Jesus, and we're all about stuff. And that works for me. And she goes to her corner of the house, and we don't see each other. It's like, this is just how it is. Now, you have your short moments of prayer time together, possibly even over meals, where you just make that a point of short coming together. But you're both following Jesus. I mean, really following him. That'll change your life, and it'll change your marriage like nothing else. It's that commitment. Let's stand together. I didn't talk about a lot of stuff, but I think I hit what needs to be hit on. This works. These principles I talked about work for you if you're single. They work in any relationship. Here it is. If you're single, don't be looking for the right person. Become the right person. Become the person you want to marry one day. Huh? And if you're married and you're just and you're together and it's been rough, become the right person. That's what you do, and only Jesus can do that. And as you become the right person, allow that to happen in your life, it's going to bring this union together to a place you've never experienced before. It's powerful. It's glorious. So let's be the right person.
Thank you for listening. For more of our podcasts and to discover how you can connect, visit us at churchak.org or download our Church on the Rock AK app from either iTunes or Google Play.